Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Horde, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth Podcast. It's the final countdown edition as we look ahead to Sunday's season opener against the Los Angeles Chargers. By the way, I don't know about you, but I can't hear that song or even without thinking of Joe Bluth performing tricks. Make that illusions on Arrested Development. Coming up, my one-on-one conversation with tight end C.J. Uzomah, who compares the Bengals to a peewee football team in a good way. Then, Dave Lapham joins me to look at three of Sunday's biggest storylines. And finally, it's our Know the Foe segment as we get the scoop on the Chargers from Joe Reedy, who covers the team for the Associated Press in Los Angeles. The Bengals Booth Podcast is presented by Prime Sport, the official hospitality partner of the Cincinnati Bengals. And here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. It's the greatest thing since dark chocolate. I stumbled upon a pack of dark chocolate Reese's peanut butter cups for the first time, and it confirmed my long-standing belief that dark chocolate is vastly superior to milk chocolate. But that's not all. According to Healthline.com, dark chocolate is loaded with nutrients that can positively affect your health. Made from the seed of the cocoa tree, it is one of the best sources of antioxidants on the planet, and studies show that dark chocolate can lower the risk of heart disease. So, I think I'll go ahead and eat a case of those dark chocolate Reese's peanut butter cups. You know, for my health. Now, let's get to football. The Bengals open the season on Sunday at 4:05 against the LA Chargers. Cincinnati is a 3-point underdog. This week, I had the opportunity to preview the game in a one-on-one visit with tight end C.J. Uzomah.
C.J., professional athletes always sound optimistic heading into the season, but what specifically gives you confidence that this could be a good year?
I just think the chemistry that we have. You know, I think in the locker room, hanging out with the defensive guys, and, you know, this is a team chemistry that I haven't seen in a really long time, you know, dating back to maybe peewee years, if we're being completely honest. So just the team chemistry that we have and the will for one another, you know, we're truly playing for the guy next to us, and we're a locker room full of brothers right now. And we're excited to get out there and not hit each other for the first time, and really just show, you know, what we're about and what this new year means to us.
So the chemistry on this team reminds you of peewee football?
It reminds me of peewee football, man. Just hanging out, messing with one another. Like, you know, it's good vibes. You know, it's really something that, you know, we come in and we're competing. You know, I'm competing against Vaughn and these you know, secondary people and all this stuff. But then we come inside and, you know, we're brothers. You know, we're hanging out, we're talking shop. It's nice. It's something I haven't seen in a long time.
We're chatting with tight end C.J. Uzomah. When asked about Joe Burrow recently, you said, quote, he's a beast. He's an absolute animal. What has he done to earn your respect before you've ever played a game?
I think just the command that he has. You know, I think we're going over situations, we're going over plays, and he's stopping the meeting sometimes and saying, hey, in this situation, you know, you can do it like this. Or in this situation, we can check it to this. Or, you know, we're going to do this. And I think, you know, as a rookie – as a quarterback in general, you want to see that. You know, you want to see someone who takes control and takes command of a huddle and things like that. But I think, you know, him coming in and, you know, showing the assertiveness that he has so early on and in such a way that we're like, oh, nice. Like, we can do that. All right, nice. Like, all right, that's a good check that we have. Oh, we can run this route this way against this coverage or against this leverage. I think things like that really sticks out to you and that resonates in your mind and that kind of gives you ease. Like, oh, nice. He knows what he's going to do. He's going to get us in the best possible play and it's up to us to make the plays.
CJ, in the most significant scrimmage inside of Paul Brown Stadium, Joe's first two passes and three of the first five were thrown to you. Did you take that as a good sign for how the tight ends will be used this year?
1,000%. No, it means a lot to me in particular, and then to the tight end group, knowing that, you know, we're in his mind. You know, we're going to be involved in the playbook. And I think I've mentioned this before. I want the onus on us. I want us to be stressed, whether it's, you know, a passing play, a running play, protection, whatever the cause is. I want I want that pressure. So, yeah, having those passes thrown early in that scrimmage, I was like, all right, here we go. This is something I can look forward to, hopefully.
There were no preseason games this year and limited tackling in practice. From your perspective, heading into your sixth NFL season, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think the coach has kind of prepared us in a good way with, you know, having no preseason games. I think it's going to be more so for me. I mean, like you said, this is my sixth year, so I've kind of I'm used to the speed of the game and things like that. I think more so for the rookies. I think, you know, defensively they've been doing some tackling drills and things like that, and we've been opening up kind of with like a tackling station with most practices. So yeah, I think we prepared ourselves in a really good way. I think kind of the coaches know, you know, this with not having as much live contact, with not having these preseason games, that needs to be a mindset and an MO. So I'm expecting us to come out and not have, you know, missed tackles, and you know, hopefully we get some turnovers and things of that nature as well.
In addition to no preseason games, there have been severe limitations on what the media can report on at training camp. And I'm sure you're going to try to surprise the Chargers with something. I would not expect you to divulge any secrets, but is that an intriguing aspect to this opener?
That's the biggest thing. I think, you know, we talk about, you know, Darren and special teams. We talked, he asked, you know, what's the biggest takeaway from game one? How are we going to win game one? And it's adjustments, because you're right. We don't know, and they don't really know what we're going to throw at them, what they're going to throw at us. I think having Hard Knocks was nice, you know, being able to, you know, kind of see their players, see just their mannerisms, how they go about their day and things like that. But yeah, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be one of those things where who can adjust the best against certain things that the other team's going to throw at them. So I'm excited about that aspect.
Couple more questions for tight end CJ Uzama. Let's look at that Chargers defense. No team in the NFL only rushed four more than the Chargers did last year. That was 82% of the time on passing plays, because they have great edge rushers in right. Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. How much of your success will simply depend on blocking those two guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think that kind of allows their secondary players and their young linebacker core to kind of play a little more freely. You know, you have two guys like that who are, you know, who I have a great deal of respect for how they play the game. You know, that dictates the flow of their defense. And I think that kind of run their defense of energy runs through those two players. So yeah, I think we're going to have to be on them early and often and kind of assert our dominance, kind of unsettle them so that they can't, you know, dictate the pace of the game, and we're not, you know, going into their counter moves or playing up to their standard.
CJ, I would describe you as a very positive, upbeat guy. How thrilled are you just at the prospect of playing football this year?
I'm excited. I'm ecstatic. I can't tell you how happy I am that, you know, off rip, you know, during OTA, like when OTA should have happened, I'm sitting here like, you got to be kidding me. Like, come on now. We have to have football. I have to get out of this house and go back up to Cincinnati and get ready for the season. So I can't tell you how thrilled I am to be back in the locker room, be with my guys, be chatting up with TB every day and you know, messing with him and Gio and all the guys, you know, all the tight ends in the room. It's this is my family. So I was away from my family for way too long during these times. So I'm excited to get back on the field with them and get after it.
Appreciate your time. Best of luck this year.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
It will be interesting to see how often Joe Burrow throws to his tight ends. Last year at LSU, Randy Moss's son Thaddeus finished with 47 catches for 570 yards, setting school records for receptions and receiving yards by a tight end. Now time to look at three of Sunday's biggest storylines with my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. The return of A.J. Green, the debut of Jonah Williams, and obviously, the debut of Joe Burrow. I've been trying to think of a debut that compares to this. I mean, the first thing that come to mind as a Bengals fan would be Carson Palmer, but for whatever reason, that didn't seem quite this hyped to me. Maybe it was the fact that he sat out his entire rookie year. Ken Griffey Jr. coming home kind of compares, but that's baseball. 162 games instead of 16. This is something special in this city's history.
I think you have to go back to Greg Cook, local UC product, drafted by Paul Brown. Big excitement. You know, Greg Cook, a local boy making good, Chillicothe, Ohio, University of Cincinnati, drafted by the Cincinnati Bengals, and he had star written all over him, just, you know, like Joe Burrow. Didn't win a Heisman Trophy or a national championship, obviously, like Joe Burrow did, but just a physical specimen. And then tragic injury obviously ended his career very prematurely, and the franchise recovered and brought Ken Anderson into the fold. But, yeah, I mean, this guy's – you talk about buzz. It's constant. Buzz.
Well, he is coming off what many have called the greatest season by an individual in college football history. He completed 76% of his passes, 5,671 yards, 60 touchdown passes, only 6 interceptions. If you use the NFL quarterback rating system, his numbers last year compute to 143.7.
Nuts.
That's ridiculous.
It's nuts. It's nuts. I mean, what is it? 157.8 is perfect.
158.3 is a perfect score. So he was 143.7.
That is nuts against that competition level. I mean, you know, we're not talking about Little Sisters of the Poor here. We're talking about the SEC, and then we're talking about getting into the national championship tournament. You know, and playing the best teams in the country, and he shredded everything. So it's that's the thing, is he did it week after week after week. It wasn't any one-hit wonder, and the consistency of his level of play to raise the bar to where he raised it to, and to reach it so many weeks in a row against more than formidable competition most weeks is truly remarkable. He had just a spectacular year.
He's 23 years old. He has already been named one of the Bengals' captains going into the season, chosen by his teammates as one of their captains. That was the first topic of conversation today when Joe Burrow met with Cincinnati area reporters to look ahead to Sunday's game against the Chargers.
You know, that was one of my goals coming in. I really didn't expect to be a captain, but, you know, I couldn't be happier to represent our team and our offense. You know, we have a lot of guys that could have been up there, but I'm happy that my team decided that I should be the one to get that honor.
Joe, you're known for the grind and preparing for games, but being your NFL debut, is this unlike anything you prepared for before?
I mean, obviously it is, but I try not to, you know, I just come in and work like I always do. Watch the film like I need to, prepare like I need to. So I try not to focus on all the pressure stuff. I feel like I'm going to be ready to play. I feel like I'm going to play well. And, you know, I'm not ready to play yet. I still have a few more days of preparation that need to come in, but I'm feeling pretty good right now.
When you look at the tape of the Chargers, what jumps out at you? Is there anything that they're doing it's like, whoa, it just all of a sudden, you know, hit you like a ton of bricks?
Obviously, they have Bosa and Ingram, two of the best pass rushers in the league. So we're going to have to I'm going to have to get the ball out of my hands quickly and know what I'm looking at. If I don't know what I'm looking at every snap, it's going to be a long day. Those guys will get to me quick, and, you know, I know the O-line will be ready for it, and I know I'll be ready for it as well.
You and Zach Taylor have both said the ultimate goal here is to win a championship. How long have you been a person who's focused on championships? Did that start at LSU in high school? When did that start?
That's the goal whenever you're playing anything. I started when I first started competing in sports. If you're not striving for a championship, for perfection, what are you doing it for? That's, you know, I'm not out there to win, go 500 and, you know, squeak into the playoffs. I'm here to win games and win championships.
Music to the ears of Bengals fans.
Yes.
He's not here to win games. He's here to win championships, exactly what he did last year at LSU. At Athens High School, good enough to have the stadium renamed for him, Joe Burrow Stadium. He'll have a statue in front of the stadium at LSU after a national championship and winning the Heisman Trophy. And now he is trying to turn a franchise around that hasn't been to the playoffs in the last 4 years.
And I think he's up to the task. I really do. You know, the thing about him, Dan, I think, is he was raised right. I mean, his parents did a remarkable job, and his dad, obviously, a very successful football player, football coach, Jim Burrow. You know, he has created almost the perfect combination of player person. I mean, this kid understands people. His people skills are off the charts. So that would stand him instead in any walk of life. And, you know, to be elected captain as a rookie quarterback is a significant thing. But he's experienced beyond his years. There's no two ways about it. But he just has a great feel for how to respect people, treat people. His people skills are off the charts. And I think his teammates are going to do everything they possibly can to support him. And he is going to do the same for them in every way feasible.
Joe Burrow is going to have a lot to say about how much improvement the Bengals make. But so is Jonah Williams. The offensive line has really struggled over the last 4 years, and they are counting on him to solidify left tackle for many years to come.
No question, Dan. It was a revolving door personnel-wise at the left tackle position, as we know, last year. And a couple of guys that filled that spot aren't even in the NFL this year. They did what they could. They gave everything they had to coach Jim Turner, but it just wasn't good enough, you know, and they had problems there. And Jonah Williams is a guy they took with the 11th pick in the draft in 2019 to anchor that position and give continuity and just solidify that spot. And that's what they're hoping that he does. When you're drafted 11th in the draft, you're drafted to shut down guys one-on-one, pass rush guys. Well, he's going to be facing two great ones in his first 100 hours of his professional career, Joey Bosa and Myles Garrett. Now, Joey Bosa, like Joe Burrow was saying earlier today, in his media press conference, he knows what Joey Bosa is all about in terms of a technician. It's going to be technique against technique, technician against technician. Joey Bosa has tremendous hands. He can get people's hands off of him. Offensive lineman has to have good hands, good hand placement to try to jam and keep his shoulders back and his shoulders and chest away from the defensive lineman. Joey Bosa does a good job of rushing with tremendous strength and a body lean and using his hands to break down the offensive lineman's hands and get to the shoulder pads and the chest of the offensive lineman. So it's going to be literally hand-to-hand combat out there at that left tackle, right defensive end position. And I do not believe that Jonah Williams is going to be out there one-on-one all day long. I think they'll slide the line his way some. I think they'll have a tight end over there some. They're going to chip with the running back some. But there are going to be snaps where Jonah Williams and Joey Bosa, the J-boys, are going to be going one-on-one, head-to-head. And really, the biggest thing, Dan, is defensive players have to earn the opportunity to pass rush. They have to get the offense in 3rd and 7 or more. The offense has to make sure the defense doesn't earn those opportunities. So the best thing to do is to be balanced and have a running game where you're going to run at Joey Bosa some, anchor him some, and make it where he's just not teeing off. If he's teeing off on Jonah Williams on every third down, if every third down is 3rd and long, could be a long afternoon. If most of the third downs are 3rd and short to medium, you've got a shot. And that's what it's going to be all about. It's going to be, can they run the football? A running game helps the offense. It helps the defense, keeps them off the field. A huge, huge ripple effect there.
Jonah Williams and his fellow offensive linemen are well aware of the fact that the world doesn't think that highly of the Bengals' offensive line, to put it nicely. And Jonah also knows that the O-linemen have the opportunity to try to start changing their reputation this week.
It's definitely something that motivates us. But I think, as I've said before, it's not so much about, trying to prove everyone wrong. It's just trying to, give Joe confidence and help this offense execute. And with that, we'll gain respect as a unit. And I think that, that's a mindset that everyone has, is we're excited about this offense execute and make us five do our job and trust that, the other six will do theirs.
If the offensive line can just be solid, they don't have to be the best offensive line in the NFL. They just can't be among the worst.
Absolutely. If they can climb to average, if they can be an average offensive line, watch out, because they do have weapons. And if Joe Burrow in 2018 didn't have the year he had in 2019, and one of the biggest differences, they put 5 out in routes. They had 5 offensive linemen and Joe Burrow. If they rush 5, they had 5 to pick it up. If it was the 6th guy coming, Joe Burrow knew he had to get the ball out of his hand before the guy got there or make the guy miss and create and extend a play. So if the Bengals offensive line can do that, if they at times can put 5 out in routes and let Joe do his thing, where he so quickly quickly diagnoses defenses. He's a problem solver, an excellent problem solver, and knows where to go with the football right away. If he can get the football out of his hand pronto, which he's great at, and they can not have to have tight ends and running backs and all that helping up front in the offensive line, it's going to be a dynamic offense. There's no question. But in order to do that, you're going to have to be in favorable situations again. You have to have some sort of a running game. You can't be one-dimensional and put five out every single pass play in the National Football League. Defensive coordinators will be drooling.
A.J. Green is expected to be in the starting lineup for the Bengals on Sunday. The question is, can he stay on the field this year? There's a website, Lap, called sportsinjurypredictor.com. I have no idea what their track record is, how legitimate it is, if there are doctors involved or whatever. But the website sportsinjurypredictor.com says there is a 93% chance that A.J. Green will get injured at some point this year, and they project him to miss 5 games. He missed every game last year. He's missed 29 over the last 4. AJ has done everything humanly possible to put his body in position to try to answer the bell for all 16 this year.
He certainly has, Dan. I mean, he had a remarkable offseason of conditioning, and I've said it a few times, he came back and looking like an Olympic caliber athlete. He looked like he was going to be part of the Olympic sprint team. Phenomenal. And his route running is extraordinary. Joe Burrow made mention of it earlier today during the course of the press conference that A.J. Green is such an explosive route runner. He's such a precise route runner. He knows exactly, where he's supposed to be, when he's supposed to be there. And, I mean, he just makes such a huge difference. There's just no two ways about it. He's upper crust in the National Football League, and you have to. You can't leave A.J. Green one-on-one. If you do, you're cruising for a bruising. There's no doubt about it. So if A.J. Green can stay healthy for 16 games, like he did for a bunch of seasons early in his career, I mean, he was about, you just check him off every single week. A.J. Green's going to be in the starting lineup. And then he's had a spell here of some bad luck, and hopefully the football gods reverse it and let him go back to earlier in his career. If he's able to play 16 games, he's going to put up significant numbers. He's going to make Joe Burrow's life a lot easier. Joe Mixon's going to like his life better. Tyler Boyd, it has a trickle effect, a ripple effect, and A.J. Green is extremely important. 3-21 in the last 24 games that A.J. Green missed. That tells you something.
In his career, when he's played, the Bengals are 66-44-1. Mm-hmm. That means they've won 60% of the time when he's played. When he hasn't played a single snap, 7 wins, 25 losses, 1 tie. They've won 22% of the time when he hasn't played.
Now, says it all.
He hasn't practiced that much after tweaking his hamstring early in training camp this year. So head coach Zach Taylor was asked, how carefully do you have to watch his snaps this Sunday against the Chargers?
We're fortunate right now. We have, you guys, we're deep at receiver. And we feel like there's a lot of guys that can step in there and be a primary receiver. And obviously A.J. Green's A.J. Green. There's no replacing him. But our guys have had a strong training camp. And Bob McNell and Troy Walters have done a great job preparing those guys to where, guys can step up. And it's really a time where you call a play and you don't necessarily have to look to see who's out there to make sure what play you're calling. You feel the confidence that all those guys can execute their jobs.
You've waited a very long time to coach AJ in a game. Have you thought about what that feeling is going to be like on Sunday, and how excited are you to have him as an asset?
He's a tremendous weapon, and he really attacks. He helps you attack defenses, and he's somebody they got to be concerned about. And not only that, but is he a great weapon? But he takes the pressure off all the other receivers, to go and just make plays as they come to him. And so he's just a tremendous weapon to have.
It is a deep group at the wide receiver position. However, A.J. Green is not the only guy who's had injury issues during training camp. That's also been the case for John Ross and T. Higgins.
It has. I mean, they haven't been in the huddle together at all, it is a little bit of a concern, obviously. When healthy, that's the strongest position group in the offensive side of the football. I think the defensive line is arguably and probably unquestioned the strength of the defense in terms of position group. So, this core, if healthy, if intact, can put up some significant numbers. There's no two ways about it. But with a rookie quarterback, to make him have to throw, if he has to throw the football, if Joe Burrow is throwing the football to these guys because he wants to, it's going to put up big numbers. If he's throwing to them because he has to, it's going to be a little bit different spin. And that's up to each and every one of the receivers, the offensive line, the running backs, everybody to execute the run game, the pass game. They've got plenty of weapons, but they have to be – you have to do both, Dan. At some point during the season in a football game, you're going to have to run the football well against tough odds. I mean, it's like, this is an incredible situation, but you got to go run the football now. And the same thing throwing the football. You're going to have a tough situation where you're going to have to throw the football to come back and you know, get in back into a football game. So that's when the rubber meets the road. That's when it separates the men from the boys. Can you run the football when you have to? Can you throw the football when you have to? When you're doing both when you want to, easy street.
AJ told reporters on Thursday that his hamstring is 100% and that he has been practicing full speed this week. Geno Atkins, on the other hand, has not been practicing due to a shoulder injury, and his status for Sunday's opener appears to be up in the air. Now time for this week's Know the Foe segment. Joe Reedy used to cover the Bengals for the Cincinnati Inquirer. Now he covers the Chargers for the Associated Press in Los Angeles. Joe joined Dave Lapham and me on the Bengals Game Plan show, and we started our conversation by discussing the Chargers head coach.
Anthony Lynn acquitted himself quite well on Hard Knocks. What kind of a guy is Anthony Lynn?
Good guy. Very, very blunt at times, but he gets it across in a way that is not you don't feel bad after he does it. I think he has many similarities to Marvin in terms of that. Anthony's one-liners with the media, I will say, are better than Marvin's were. He's a little more joking with the media, which I think is good at times. But I think much as Hard Knocks in 2009 did a good job of acquitting Marvin to a national audience, I think that, especially with everything that was going on in society and everything, Anthony came out very well on this edition of Hard Knocks.
Yeah, I thought he was the star of the show this time around. We're talking to Joe Reedy. Joe, the Chargers were 5-11 last year after going 12-4 and winning a playoff game the year before. Do you think this year's team is closer to 12 wins or 5 wins?
I think closer to 12 wins, Dan. I think when you look at last year, 9 of the 11 losses were by 8 points or fewer, and there are a few factors that I will put on that. Their third down defense, teams were converting at a 50 to 55% clip, and if you can't get off the field on third down, it's going to be a very long day for you. And also the 8 red zone turnovers that led the league as well, and they didn't generate enough. They gave it away more than a few times with fumbles and Phillip Rivers in late game situations, but they didn't take it away enough either. I think that it might be closer to the 2018 team in terms of changes with the offense and a quarterback. That'll be a lot better, and I think this defense is a lot better at linebacker in the secondary than last year.
Boy, 8 red zone turnovers. I know Rivers had 18 interceptions, and but you're right, the takeaways, there were 10 interceptions and 3 fumble recoveries, 13 takeaways in a 16-game season for a defense that statistically tied for 6th in the NFL, 5th in the league defending the pass, but they just couldn't take the football away. And with those pass rushers, 2 Pro Bowl pass rushers, 2 Pro Bowl cornerbacks, well, I guess they just signed one of them, but it just didn't compute. You know, Derwin James was there the whole season, not going to have him this year, but they had plenty of players, didn't they?
Well, Derwin missed 10 games last
right.
year due to the broken foot.
Right.
So I think that was a big loss for him, but I think they really were thin at linebacker the last couple years, and they've really boned up in terms of that area this year. they drafted Kenneth Murray, they traded up with New England to get him in the first round. Former Bengal Nick Vigil is here, who has versatility at all three spots. They've liked what he's done. I think the secondary with that in Chris Harris, he's going back to covering the slot and playing his natural position, which will be good. Casey Hayward has always been aggressive. And then, you know, you had that defensive line, which is already good, but it has gotten a lot better with Linval Joseph in the middle, which
right.
he's been called everything from a Mack truck to a rolling Coke machine by a couple players here during training camp. So he'll plug up the middle on the run and also give them some pressure on the pass rush up the middle, which they really haven't had.
We're talking to our buddy Joe Reedy, who covers the Chargers for the Associated Press in L.A. It is going to be strange, Joe, to see the Chargers trot out there with somebody other than Phillip Rivers as the starting quarterback. It'll be the first time in 15 years. We're all familiar with Tyrod Taylor, who takes over. How much different is this offense going to be?
Well, I think on third and less than a yard, they'll run quarterback sneaks for the first time since at least 2006. and that, yeah. You know, Phillip for as good of a quarterback he was a statue back there, your traditional pocket passer, not a lot on scrambling. I think you're going to see a lot more RPOs. The Tyrod will throw a lot more on the scramble. I think without having Melvin Gordon here, with Austin Eckler, with what he can do at running back in terms of the all-purpose yards and touches, I think it's a lot more dynamic offense. But I think much as you look out with the Bengals too, there's questions with the offensive line, especially this Chargers offensive line. Mike Pouncey is questionable this week. He played in only 5 games last year due to a neck injury. Sam Tevi is moving to left tackle, and he traditionally, especially in pass coverage, has rated not well among offensive tackles. And if you're bad at pass protection and right tackle, I don't know how you're going to do a left tackle. The right side has gotten better with Brian Bulaga and Trey Turner, but that left side still concerns me a lot.
Yeah, that's an interesting dynamic. When you look at Tyrod Taylor, like you mentioned, RPO, zone reads, those kind of things. Anthony Lynn was a backup running back with the Denver Broncos when Terrell Davis was there. Mike Shanahan, he knows about the running game. Tyrod Taylor and Anthony Lynn were both with the Buffalo Bills when the Buffalo Bills led the NFL in rushing in 2016. To me, it stands to reason Anthony Lynn is going to want to pound Eckler. And Tyrod Taylor, I think, is going to be a factor on the ground. It wouldn't surprise me if Eckler's numbers, he had over 1,500 all-purpose numbers last year. He was only 7 yards short of 1,000 receiving and rushed for like 550. I wouldn't be surprised to see the numbers reverse. What do you think?
I don't know if he'll get to close to 1,000 yards running lap. They do have depth at running back, and I don't see Eckler as a, you know, 20 to 22 carry guy game.
Mm-hmm.
Justin Jackson, they've really been impressed with, but he's been injury prone. And Josh Kelly, the 4th round pick out of UCLA, they really like too in terms of a Melvin Gordon type back. I know Dan has seen UCLA against UC the past couple years, but the ironic thing is Josh Kelly was injured in both of those games, so really UC fans have no knowledge of him. I think the one area that's improved with Josh Kelly too is that he's catching a ball out of the backfield, something that we haven't seen that I didn't see him do at UCLA. So I think, will they carry the ball more than 20 times a game? Yes, but I think it'll be almost a running back by committee set.
Okay.
Yeah, UC didn't have to deal with Joshua Kelly when he was at UCLA, but USC did, and he ran for 289 yards in one game. A couple more questions for our pal Joe Reedy, who covers the Chargers for the Associated Press. The Rams and Chargers, Joe, move into this $5 billion palace, SoFi Stadium, this year. It's an obnoxious display of wealth. It's spectacular. Here's my question for you, though. What's the interest level in L.A. in the Chargers these days?
I think it's growing. I think Hard Knocks definitely helps, but I also think that they've having guys that Philip wasn't much of a promoter of the franchise in L.A. He still lived in San Diego and everything, but I think with a young roster, with a Joey Bosa who's coming out of his shell a lot more, Derwin James was, you know, face of the franchise, and I think despite injuries, they'll still let him around. Tyrod Taylor, you know, as far as a quarterback, what you want him to promote and everything. Austin Eckler, there's definitely the sense of promotion, and I think that, you know, this franchise, let's face it, has been waiting for 20 to 25 years to move into a new facility that they couldn't get in San Diego, and they were finally able to team up, you know, with the Rams here. I think there's a lot of excitement. It's certainly the fans in San Diego still follow them, and I think everybody's excited for a new football facility in L.A. whenever they get the chance to come in. And I was in there last Friday for the media tour, and it really is a spectacular facility. Almost reminds me a little bit of the Meadowlands inside in terms of the dynamic that way, but with the video board and, you know, all the other amenities, I think it really changes the face of stadiums throughout the league.
Joe, when you talk about the Chargers receivers, and I'm putting Eckler in that category, 92 catches, 993 yards, 8 touchdown catches, pretty spectacular. Mike Williams led the NFL, averaging 20.4 yards reception. He had over 1,000 yards receiving. But the one that a lot of players in the Bengals talk about is the tremendous respect for Keenan Allen. You know, 104 catches, 1,199 yards last year, 3 straight 1,000-plus yard seasons with 6 touchdown catches in 3 straight years. Very consistent. They say that this guy, he makes plays no matter what the circumstances, what the situations. Give us your appraisal of Keenan Allen.
Dave, to me, has always been an underrated receiver, and I think among fans and maybe broadcasters, but I think players consider him a top 5, top 6 receiver. On Saturday, he signed an $80.1 million contract and makes him second in terms of average pay among receivers. So he is in a top 5 list. You know, maybe the top 5 list you really want to be in. Very good route runner, very good possession receiver, very good on routes and everything. Will get the tough balls, will win the matchups. Will burn cornerbacks and safeties. But I also think the other receiver to watch out for in this game too is Hunter Henry, is the tight end.
Yep.
He has excelled against the AFC North in the past, and you know, he's got a lot to prove in a contract year too. And for the first time in 3 years, he is finally healthy. Knock on wood.
My thanks to CJ Uzama and Joe Reedy, and that's going to do it for this episode of the Bengals Booth Podcast, brought to you by Prime Sport, the official hospitality partner of the Cincinnati Bengals. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe, and if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.